What is up, Pod Nation? Welcome to the Podio Slave Podcast. Nate here. Happy to chill with you guys today and geek out. I'm here with my friends Anthony and Tony. How you guys doing tonight?
Good, man.
Doing fantastic. How you doing, Nate? Doing good?
I'm doing awesome, man. We got a special one tonight. Going to geek out with someone from our hometown, something special related to our, I'd say it's our favorite music venue.
Anybody that's listened to this podcast knows what we're talking about. We're talking about the State Theater. We're talking about Lauren Wayne, the GM of the State Theater, the talent buyer for the State Theater for the last 10 years plus. We had her on tonight, and it was a blast, right? It was a great conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're from Maine, you know the State Theater in Portland, Maine, you know, just under 2,000 cap, perfect size room. If you've been to a show in Portland, Maine, you know Portland loves music. And we all started going there in our early teens, and we cannot wait to get back there. We're really jonesing to get into it. And I think that comes across in our interview with Lauren.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Let's geek out with Lauren Wayne.
If you like what you hear tonight, please check us out on the social media platforms, Instagram and Twitter at PodioSlave, and Gmail. You can email us at Gmail, PodioSlavePodcast@gmail.com. Thanks. Lauren, thank you for coming on tonight. We really appreciate your time and appreciate you coming on to talk with us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm psyched.
So we're about a year old as a podcast now. And when we started, it was over bonding over our love of live music and going to shows together and been doing that for years. We often spent time at the State Theater, which you were the GM for. Now it have been for, 11 years.
Yeah, we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last year.
Nice. So we had you circled. We were like, we would love to talk to Lauren about how that all goes down, especially where there was a hiccup for us as kids. Like, we were going when we were 16, 17 in the early 2000s, and then it closed because of some, renovations being needed and safety stuff and code stuff. And then to have it open back up in 2010 and really kind of hit the ground running. We thought about you. We needed to hear how that all went down. So thanks again for coming on.
I've got all the story.
We're in for it.
Yeah, you are. Brazy shit. Just kidding.
So Lauren, you don't wake up and just one day become the GM of the State Theater. Like, obviously there's a music passion, I'm assuming. So how did that all start? Like, your earliest music memory where you were like, you know what? I gravitate more towards music than, I don't know, something someone else would like as a kid.
And that's exactly how it started for me, really. And I feel like most people in the business, it started that way. You have to have a passion for music, whether it's, recorded or live. Mine particularly is live music. And I just remember always feeling that way since I was a little kid, just loving it so much. And then the older I got and the more freedom I got and the more concerts I was able to go to, I remember my first concert in high school, my real first concert that I went to alone with friends was the Rolling Stones and Living Color opened up for them.
Nice.
And my poor friend's parents for some reason could not go, and they had 4 tickets in like the 10th row or something. And so they gave them to my friend John, and John's like, you guys want to go? And we're like, yeah. And I just remember that experience, all of it, not just the music, but just the experience and being with the crowd and being surrounded by adults and like listening to the Stones and like getting past joints from like old people. I was like, this is the coolest. I want to do this. And so in college, I just went to as many live shows as I could. And I was probably like 2 or 3 shows a week throughout college, and then never really kind of thought about this kind of a position and job. I it didn't come into my mind until I moved to Portland and went to the Skinny. It was a bar that was owned and operated by my friends, Johnny and Mello, and spent a lot of time there. And actually that's how I met the person who hired me for this fucked up business. although I thank him for it every day. It was Jim Ahern. And he at the time worked for Don Law down in Boston. That's how I got my start. And then just, did all kinds of stuff for Don Lom, Tea Party, and it was eventually morphed into Live Nation. But really stuck with the marketing side of the business more than buying. And then dabbled in a little bit of talent buying, but not too much because it was Portland, Maine. And I don't know if you guys remember, but back in 2003, 2004, there wasn't a ton of places to play. Like, the Big Easy was pretty much the only one before Space Gallery opened up. And And the Skinny was open, but only for 2 years. And then, of course, the State. So we were doing, when I worked with Live Nation, we were the exclusive promoters at the State at the time. So we did all the shows before the city shut that place down.
It was such a sad moment.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking. We were all like, and we're, you know, early 20s at the time. Like, this was when stuff would have been coming through, and we were already living there when we were 17. So we definitely would have been there 20, 21, 22. But
yeah,
that was a bummer. But you brought it back. So that's we'll get to that in a second. So yeah, you were doing the Live Nation thing. Can you take us through when you're doing the marketing thing? What does a day like that look like for you?
I particularly don't, well, I shouldn't say that. In the position that I was with the director of marketing for Live Nation in Boston, when their director actually went on maternity leave, I took over. It wasn't my favorite thing to do, but now I really love it. I think that that's more because I have, you know, a little bit more skin in the game, and it's just a cooler, I should say not a cooler company, but it is. And I like who I work for and with so much more, but it's a lot of media buying and media planning and budgeting out. And then when you work for a company that big, they put you on a centralized marketing platform. So you're like doing your media plan and then having to upload your media plan and then, you know, justifying your media spends. It's doing a lot of communicating with agencies because each agency, large agency, has their own marketing person and marketing department, which oversees the artist marketing. So it's a lot of back and forth with agency marketing teams and just making, they want to make sure that, you know, you've got a grasp on things and you're spending the money smartly and wisely. You're not overspending because a lot of the deals depend on how much money that you're spending, a promoter spends. So that's, you know, it's a lot of PR stuff. A lot of promotions, lots of promotions, especially if the show isn't selling, but it's never the marketer's fault if the show doesn't sell, it's the talent buyers.
What about the band? Is it the band's fault?
Never the band's fault.
It sounds like it was a kind of a cool organic progression though, because it wasn't like your main focus primarily when you got to Maine and you kind of
when I feel like we have the luxury of being in a small town, but it's also very difficult, or it's a bigger town now, but back in the day. And still, it holds true now. The companies are rather smaller. The market's obviously way more smaller. It was tertiary. Now I consider it more of a secondary market. But compared to the Boston, New York, Atlanta, and the major markets, you know, anybody in the company, no matter who you work for, if you're in a smaller market, you're wearing many hats. So for me, it was learning how to market a show, learning how to sell the show and sell the tickets. And then my passion really was, okay, I want to, you know, talent buy, which is just book a show. So that's what I really love doing. But I was doing like the bands that I love the most, which was, we did like Animal Collective and Rachel Yamagata and Badly Drawn Boy. The Decemberists all played at the Big Easy, but no one really showed up. So that was fun. And then basically Don Law and his team were like, you're not talent buying it. You're not buying anymore. And I was like, okay. And I stopped.
What year was that?
That was about 2002 through 2004, I want to say.
Wow, you were like 5 years ahead of the game.
Literally like 33 people showed up for Animal Collective. I still have that settlement.
Wow.
It was hilarious. Wow. But not really. It was sad.
That room was fun too. Tiny, tiny room. Funky to get in and out of.
Yeah.
I can imagine like seeing something. Being able to tell that story is pretty cool though. You'd be able to see... You had the Decemberists there before they blew up, because they blew up.
Yeah, they blew up. They really did. No, it's always fun. I mean, I feel like if you're in the right place and you know what you're doing, you're always you always have your finger on the pulse, right? Or at least you're supposed to. So we've even had bands through the State Theater or Port City Music Hall that just like, you know, 2 months later, we're never going to get back again because they're just too big.
So at that point doing that, where like you're booking the bands you like, at some point where you're like, all right, if I'm going to do this, I got to kind of get out of that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of growing up and you know, figuring out the business, because I'd never been in it on the backside like this before. So you have to figure it out fast because it is a business. And if you're not making money, you're out of business. Or they tell you that to stop. So it really was just learning that and just knowing that you can't, a market like this can't support one genre, right? Like at the State Theater, we can't just book all hip hop and we can't just book metal. We have to book everything because there's so many different tastes and we're smaller. And I think I learned that relatively quickly, and I feel like I'm relatively good at it. And we've been quite successful. I mean, it's also lots of my social media coordinator. He's our resident metal nerd. He's like, he's got great taste in all kinds of music, but he hates it too, though. Cause you know, when we're promoting a show that we're not necessarily, you know, we're like, oh, that's great music. We don't listen to it, but we'll sell it. We'll always get comments from some like hipster dick. He's like, oh, I can't believe you booked my mom's favorite band from the 70s or something. It's like,
the comments are great.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Or bad. Oh,
yeah.
I'm
like, well,
that's just, they made us an $80,000 gross. So fuck you.
And yes, you can swear. Swear as much as you want.
Oh, I know. I forgot. I didn't even ask. I'm sorry. You can bleep me out.
We have it written down as yes. It's okay, a yes. Good. So okay. Go for it.
It's like, I don't know if I can do one of these without swearing. And my kid's in bed. So yeah.
Yeah, we actually interviewed Anthony over here last week, kind of turned the cameras inward, and he was telling us about some stories on how you can't swear because of the FCC regulations for college radio. So, we're uncensored here, which is awesome.
That's great.
And we can speak our minds, and right now no one's telling us what we can and can't say. So we're careful. Obviously, we're not assholes, but it's been fun to be able to just do us.
That's awesome.
So given what you just said, it seemed like it was like a perfect storm, like, I mean, 2010-ish, it's like the recession, Maine, we're all from there, especially Portland. And it was definitely a secondary or even beyond market. It was passed over so many times on tours and whatnot.
Yeah, it was definitely tertiary. And then, you know, when I work, I think I said this, but when I work with Live Nation, we had the exclusive booking deal with the state before the city closed it. And it was a struggle to get people there. I mean, there were some artists that were bigger that would play it every year because they loved it or they had some kind of personal tie with it. But it was a struggle to get big name acts there. And then the city closed it down for 4 years. We came in, signed the lease and renovated it and dumped a whole bunch of money into it. In the first year, October 15th was our opening night with My Morning Jacket. And I definitely could not have done that by myself, especially being out of the buying or the booking game for so long. So the Alex and Glancy, Jim Glancy and John Moore from the Bowery, John and Jim are from the Bowery and Alex is with Higher Ground. They finagled their relationships and they were able to get My Morning Jacket for the first night. And then we got Mo, but the first fall in 2010, it was, I think we had maybe 20 shows. Damn. And it was a fucking struggle to get those shows. It was a lot of outreach. And then as soon as artists and agents and managers figured out that we were legit and the venue was like a really awesome place to play, it got so much easier. And now it's completely opposite. I field more inquiries than I am like going after shows, although I still go after shows when I can, for sure. I'm looking at you, Taylor Swift.
She's due. She's due for something like that.
Yeah, right. I know. I was hoping after this year.
So something drew you to the state. Like, I assume you'd been to the State Theater before taking the gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And like you just, it's a place that I was describing it to these guys. Like the first time I stepped foot in there was in the year 2000. And I was like, this place is magical. Like I feel like I'm not supposed to be here. I was 14 years old. So like, did you have like one of those, like, this place is special?
Yeah, totally. The first show when I moved here from Arizona, I think we hit a show within the first month. I think it was like, it was Jurassic Park, and I can't remember who opened up for them, but when you step in there, and then even before knowing the history, because it's a, you know, it's a 90-year-old building, but a 90-year-old business run by many different people. It's just an amazing place. Like, you can just feel it when you're in there. And beyond that, you know, when you step into the auditorium, it's such a cool place to see a show because it's, you know, wider than it is narrow. So you can, you know, its capacity is 1950, but you feel like you can get right up front with 1,000 of your closest friends. It's a super intimate venue, I think. And then, of course, after we renovated it, it just got better and then made it sound better. Yeah, but it is definitely, it's funny. I call it home sometimes, especially because our offices are backstage. And so I'll be like, I got to go home. And then I realize that I talked about, it's the State Theater. My family's like, you're at home. Like, oh.
We can definitely relate to being up front with 1,000 of your best friends. That's, I don't know how many times I've been in that second bar now that since the renovation, the like middle tier there,
yep,
and thought, oh man, like, all right, I've had enough of this spot. Let's just move down front. And you just get down front. Like there's always a spot, even though it's 2,000 people. So
I know you can always inch your way up there. And for the most part, Portlanders are amazing, right? So everybody's nice. Usually everybody's moving and dancing, unlike another city south of us. It's and we're so welcoming, and I think we're very grateful when we get shows, even though we get a ton of them now. I think Portland crowds are the best crowds for sure. So it makes the whole experience really cool.
Yeah, we were chatting of just comparable venues, and we were just mentioning the Worcester Palladium and how, you know, style-wise it's similar. But I mean, we were just saying that place has no soul. It's just like, it's a whole different vibe in there. You know, same, similar layout, but it just, maybe it's because we started going to the State Theater, but it's just a different ballgame. And it's one of those, if you know, you know. It's a, it's just a special place.
It is a special place. And a lot of that too, I think, especially now, really comes from the people who work there and what we put into it. And I feel like if I can brag about our staff for a little bit, they're just fucking amazing. And every single person who works for us loves live music. There's not one person on our staff, whether it's bartender, production, box office, security, who doesn't. And I think that really makes a difference because they just want, they want to enjoy the show along with the fans. Of course, we want to give the fans, you know, a super secure place and safe place to see a show. But everybody there is there for the same reason, really. I think that really comes through.
So I kind of wanted to rewind it back a little bit here on Live Nation. Are you able to talk about your experience there before? You said it was Clear Channel moving into Live Nation at one point.
Yeah, well, it was Don Law. So I got hired when it was Don Law Company. And then SFX, Robert Silliman, rolled up a bunch of regional promoters into one company and centralized it. And then, so we were SFX. And then they realized maybe that's not the smartest move. You can't really run a company like that, because every region is different, right? So it's all different. So then it turned into Tea Party Concerts, which was like a regional name. And then Clear Channel bought everything. So it's Clear Channel Entertainment. And then and then Live Nation came in. They spun it off into Live Nation. So yeah, that's who I worked for. And it wasn't a bad experience. Like I, the people in the Boston office were amazing, and it's definitely where I learned a lot of what I know today. And they're cool, and they're still operating down there. I feel pretty grateful to have worked for them, but I'm glad that I don't anymore.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you kind of had the best of both worlds, because you had your training in like the independent venue with the Big Easy, the Clear Channel Live Nations of the world, which we've talked about expansive on this podcast. We probably have similar sentiment.
Working for and with Live Nation that's why I do feel grateful. I mean, it's really the fastest way to learn how to deal with big agencies, right? Because and they, you know, you're automatically legitimate, and like people take your phone calls and people respond to your emails, and it was good. But having gone through that experience and then worked for such a large company, I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to have the opportunity to have left and be working for the people I work for now, for sure.
That's awesome. It's like playing for the majors and then going, I'm going to start my own team now.
Yeah, spin it off. See ya.
Which is exactly what you did in 2010, right? I mean, you guys bought the building, renovated it, opened it back up.
So Alex Crothers, who operates Higher Ground, owns and operates Higher Ground over in Burlington. And he also owns his own promotion company, Crothers Entertainment. He was in negotiations for, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 years with the landlord who owned the building of the State Theater, and then finally signed the lease. Before he signed the lease, he was like, hey, this is a huge project. This is like, you know, millions of dollars of renovation. It's a big building, we have to fill it, you know, 100+ times a year. So he actually approached Jim Glancy and John Moore with Bowery Presents, who was out of New York, at the time, the biggest independent promoter out of the East Coast, I believe. And they were like, yeah, this is awesome. We love this building. And they became partners and signed the lease in May 2010, and then called me to run it. And I said, hell yeah.
That actually makes sense now, because Tuan mentioned the soul of the State Theater kind of being a differentiator from the Worcester Palladium. And I lived in New York City. I think last time, you know, I was hanging out at the State Theater all the time was when I moved to New York in 2007. So I was at the Bowery Ballroom and Webster Hall, all those venues under that organization. Yeah, they all have that soul.
An amazing job.
Such a great job. Yeah,
totally.
So was that a pretty daunting experience to like do the renovation? Because I'm trying to think back, like, before it went away, like, in 2005, whatever it was, I remember, like, dust falling from the ceiling from,
yeah,
like,
the plaster cracked
off and
fell during a concert.
Yeah, I probably still have the dust in my hair, but so it must have been pretty daunting. Like,
it was daunting. I cried every night for like months.
Oh no.
Because not only it was just overwhelming, because not only was I in charge of this renovation that I didn't know much about old buildings, and I definitely didn't know how to renovate a 90-year-old building. But then, you know, Alex and Jim and John, they were just like, okay, here's the company, have fun. They weren't like that exactly, but you know, they were there for whatever I needed. But I, you know, I had to hire a full staff. I had to like run 100 people, and I'd never managed that many people. I managed a really small team in Boston, but that was like maybe 3 people. So it was super stressful. And then, you know, when you're a booker, you have an opening date. That's your opening date. Like, you can't be late. You have to honor that date for so many reasons, not only because you have to pay the band, but like, you just announced to the world that you're going to be opening that date. So there was no being late. And that was also added to the stress. But it was worth it. After 2 months, I stopped crying, and then we opened on time.
Well, and anybody that's was in that building before the renovation, A, thanks you for renovating the bathrooms, and B, they know how much work went into it, because it was a cool spot before, but now it's a cool spot. You kept all the character, and you can fill it, and you know, there's places to stand to watch the show, there's places to sit to watch the show. There really isn't a bad seat in the house. And
no, there's not.
It's it really breathed life into the Portland music scene at the time when there wasn't a ton of stuff that we were getting then. I mean, it was a tertiary market.
Yeah, it was hardly anything.
So when you're booking it, you must be calling in every favor, like you said, for those first couple of months. But you probably have a feeling like, I have to make this my own, but also have to like figure out how the city is going to react to it. That's got to be a tough tightrope to walk.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, the difficult part was not fitting in with the community. I feel like, you know, it was already so ingrained in the community. And when we opened up that first weekend, we actually had a free open house on the Sunday, and we opened up for like 6 hours and had all local bands, and it was all free. And we had older people walk in telling us their memories of going to movies there with their grandparents. I mean, these are like 70, 80-year-old people with history with this building. So it wasn't living up to that, I think, was the pressure. But we've always been really good, I think, in our relationship and wanting to keep that relationship intact with Portland. And then making it our own, yeah, that was, I think it took like about 5-6 months. And then we really hit our stride. And we tried multiple different things. You know, for the first couple of months, the Bowery and Alex had to call in their favors. And so we were getting some of those bands because of their relationships. We tried to do block bookings at one point, you know, when you're booking New York, Boston, Portland, and Burlington. And then that just fell apart, because I don't know if you guys have spent much time in Boston or Burlington. They're completely different markets. Like, Burlington is such a big college town with a huge jam band scene. And granted, we have a healthy one here. It's not as strong as it is in Burlington. So, you know, after 6 months, I think we hit our stride for sure. And now really, like I said, it really is just, you just pack it with all kinds of genres, and anything that I think is going to sell more than 1,000 tickets and be a good show and a safe show, we'll do it.
Yeah, I think like context is so key. Like in 2010, Portland was not what it is now. I mean, it wasn't the brewery per capita foodie nation type of thing. So like, what do you have to lean on for like a selling point? Like, it's a seaside town. It's just north of Boston.
Yeah. Pretty. I mean, yeah. Well,
what's that, Tom?
It's pretty in the summer.
It's pretty
and
in the
we'll
summer.
Pay you
right.
A lot of money. money talks.
Yeah,
right?
That works.
Money talks. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's just, it's not afraid to spend money on the right bands that you know are going to sell the tickets. And really, that's how you're getting the bands up here. And then how you treat the bands while they're here and their experience with the fans really makes a difference. And I can't remember a show where a band hasn't walked backstage and been like, holy shit, that crowd is so amazing. I mean, Portland fans, man, they're vocal and they're not afraid to like cheer and like get up and dance. It's it's so different, I feel like, than a Boston experience for some reason. So yeah, money talks, crowds talk, the way you treat a band. And then all of the beer and the restaurant scene came in. And I feel like we've grown up together, especially in the past 5-6 years. We really have. And we really do rely on each other now, which has made the past year, I think, so sad, but also so encouraging, because you really do realize how reliant you are on your neighborhood and your community and your fellow businesses, for sure.
I love that you highlighted the importance of the crowd, which is the consumer base at the end of the day, but it is right. So vital. And I think we're all so happy to be from there, because the difference, like you said, from the Boston crowd and the Maine crowd is, I think Boston's a little more rough around the edges. Maine's like very chill, kind of laid back. That's why when I moved here to California, everyone's like, "You're from here, right?" I'm like, no, I'm from Maine. And they're like, "Oh, okay." So there's a similar kind of sister city thing going on there. But I appreciate that, you know, kind of highlight the crowd, that they make the show so much bigger. And I feel like that must have just gained that momentum for you on booking these shows, because the crowd response was so strong, both on selling out venues, but just that response during the show itself.
Yeah, no, I mean, we wouldn't be here without the fans and the customers, and we, that's why it's super integral for our company and our business to treat fans so well and give them a great experience. I feel like we do that at the State. It was very important for me to create that kind of experience out on Thompson's Point, which I feel like we nailed pretty well. And you know, without the fans, nobody would be on stage. And that's really what we're trying to do, is get the fans on the stage to react with their favorite fans.
So you're a couple of years into the reopen. You acquire Port City. Was that 2009 it opened, but you guys acquired it in 2013.
Yeah.
Is that to help you supplement, you know, you've got bands that maybe aren't quite at that 1900 cap level, but you want to see them come through, and you, at some point they might be there.
Right.
You're kind of building that stable.
Yeah. I think, you know, if the previous owner had run it successfully and it was a smooth operation, we would not have been interested. We rented it, and we, you know, we put shows in there multiple times a year, which was great. But it just wasn't, I mean, I don't know if you guys know the history of the previous owner. It just wasn't run great.
A little bit.
And he tried to get us to buy the business, and we just weren't interested. We didn't feel like there was a big enough name. And then he got into all kinds of trouble and then agreed to sell it. Just, it was an acquisition sale, really. And we just came in and took over the assets and the lease. And it was for that. It was because we felt it was so important to have a development room, right? So funnel those baby bands, and personally, like all the bands that I love, into the State, and to help them grow their business. So a band never wants to stay stagnant, just like any business. They want to keep growing and developing. And so that's really the ecosystem of Portland venues. You go to the smaller venues, you're like psyched when you get to the point where you're playing Port City and selling 500 tickets. And then your next step up, after maybe 2 sellouts at Port City, you go to the State and you sell that out. You play that multiple times. And then now you can either go to the arena or you can go to Thompson's Point. So we really have it all.
And Port City has what I call, or did have, the adult section, as I call it, the nook on the side there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was called VIP. And I was like, don't call it VIP. Preferred seating.
That was another spot that was easy. You could see the show from anywhere. The acoustics were great. It sounded, everything sounded great.
Gosh, RIP, but that room, that's one thing that the previous owner did right. He spared no expense when he opened that room. He spent a ton of money on it, soundproofed it. It was a fucking amazing sounding room. It looked really cool. Yeah, it was sad to see that go. We had to close that last year.
Even down to the wallpaper on the side, on the right.
And stenciled.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Damn. Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Preferred
the
seating.
Bathroom situation. The bathroom situation, again, like the State Theater, bathroom's in the basement. It's just like, no, no.
Yeah, so you just hold it so you wouldn't miss a song.
Yeah. Or 3 songs.
Right.
I was going to say the preferred seating. I think the preferred seating is a Live Nation Ticketmaster
verbiage. No, that's VIP.
That's VIP.
We have preferred seating.
It's important, I think, for anyone listening. Like, we didn't have those venues on our come up. It was really just the State Theater, the Civic Center.
asylum.
And I guess the asylum, but it wasn't all ages. It kept going back and forth from all ages. It was like hard to get in there as a kid. But right. Yeah, with the addition of Port City and now, like, I mean, how many venues are you operating now?
Well, we were operating three exclusively. We closed Port City last year. We still have the state, obviously. We're exclusive out at Thompson's Point. And then we go into any open room. So I work really a lot with Ken over at Portland House of Music and Events. And we'll do shows. We've done shows at Blue. We've done a few shows at Space. Not so much in the near past. I can't remember the last show we did there. But yeah, we'll go into any room that makes sense for the band. It's really, and One Longfellow, a ton of shows at One Longfellow.
So let's take us back a couple of years after the state comes back. Kind of what I view as almost the precursor to Thompson's Point was that Mumford show.
Oh God, yeah. Gentlemen of the Road.
Yeah. Gentlemen of the Road. I was there. Tony, you were there.
I was there. Yeah.
Nate, were you there?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
So
good for you guys.
How does that even come about? Because that's like the last place I would have thought for a show to happen, but in hindsight, really genius. It's like the most beautiful part of the whole state.
Yeah, it really is. It is the, I think, God, if only we could drop a permanent stage there. It'd be the best ever.
Right.
Yeah, it really, I remember, so I was in Arizona, I was on vacation at the time, and Mumford and Sons work, I think still work with AEG, Madison House, and there was a guy that they're really close to called Mike Luba. And I was getting these calls and emails, these frantic calls from like Mike Luba. He's like, I'm coming up. You got to take me and we got to go see the Easton Prom. We're going to do a show there. And I was like, I'm in Arizona. but he was like, no, you got to fly home early. I didn't fly home early, but like the day I flew home or the next day, he was all about it. So it was really Mumford and Sons who came up with this idea. They wanted to pick four markets across the country that were in not well-known markets, just random markets, but in these epic, epic outdoor spots. So they had like 20 in mind. And then they were just like, okay, well, every local promoter in these markets, tell us why we need to do the show here. So we sent them pictures. We took Mike Luba on a tour. I wrote some ridiculous, like dramatic email and like letter to them. And they chose Portland as one of the stops. They called it the stopovers. And then we had, I mean, this literally was in, I think, January or February. And it was like March or April. And the stopover was August 4th, 2012. So we had like months to put this together on city property, which added like a whole like new set of restrictions and hoops that we had to jump over. It was a crazy couple of months, but we did it. And it was, I mean, fucking epic. It was awesome. But it was it was a lot of work. I mean, I would do it again, but maybe once a year.
Right. Yeah.
Unless it were a permanent venue.
Yeah.
How many people did you sell for that?
Well, we tried to sell 20. They only gave us a capacity of 16.
Wow.
Was that sold out?
I remember it being a lot. Yeah.
16?
Yeah. We could have fit 30.
Yeah.
That would have been. I mean, it was already nuts. I. That was quite a day. It was warm, but it was not too warm. And as the sun went down, it was kind of perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
there was fireworks at the end. It was the whole thing was
to get the city to approve us to do that. I mean, we actually had to like build new drainage. You know where the stage was? There was, I don't know if you guys remember, but right in front of the stage before that we rebuilt the area was like a little swamp. So we had to completely regrade, like dig a permanent trench and drainage for the city. And for us too, so people could stand there and have it be secure. It was insane. And the city's like, well, you better have a rain date or be able to move the show if it rains, because we're not letting anybody on the hill if it rains. So when I woke up that morning, I mean, the first thing, I didn't even get out of bed. I just like looked out my curtains and I saw blue sky and I, oh my God, the sense of relief.
Yeah, because you get the natural like amphitheater, you know, almost, you know, like Red Rocks is like, there's not a bad view at Red Rocks. Like same thing there. Like you could be in the way back and see everything.
Yeah, and like, yeah, and have the ocean be the backdrop and all the islands.
Wow. So the civil engineering
all
behind
the bands,
that.
And then they all
civil
came out engineering.
And then
it's just a whole nother animal, yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool. And then after did you guys go to any of the after shows?
I didn't, no.
So they were basically it really was Mumford, it was a great idea. They were like, all right, Lauren, we want you to get every venue you can and secure an after party, and then we'll send the guys separately and the openers to each of these after parties. So the Dropkicks played a ticketed show at the State Theater after the Mumford and Sons show. Marcus went to Port City and had like a little private show there. Reggie Watts went to the Big Easy, and then some of the other band DJ'd at Space Gallery. Nice. It was freaking awesome. Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, Marcus Mumford was doing a show in the preferred seated section. There's only like 20 of us there. It's crazy.
That's amazing. Awesome. And that's like a once in a, like for that, the after show. So that's like once in a lifetime type of thing.
Yeah. It really, well, yeah. I mean, maybe once every 10 years would be awesome.
Right.
But it really, yeah, it's a special, like you have to be special band to do that, right? Like you couldn't have just anyone. It's just the crowd that they curate, and it was so peaceful. There were no issues.
Well, next year is 10 years, so.
Hey, I'd do
just
it.
Just saying.
Let's get the band.
We'd be down for sure.
That was the tour kickoff too, that date, I think, right?
I think that, I don't remember.
Right? I think it was.
I think it was because it was August 4th and that they did all August dates.
Yeah. Even more pressure. Whew.
So that must have kind of led you to think we got to have an outdoor venue that we can do more of this, not necessarily to that scale, but Thompson's Point.
Yeah.
And what, 15? Does that sound right? 15 to 2015, 2016?
Oh, at Thompson's Point?
Yeah.
2015 was our first season, although two of the shows got canceled. Yeah, so we'd always been looking, and we did shows down at Ocean Gateway, a couple of shows there. It just wasn't right. The vibe really, and standing on concrete sucks. And we were just trying to find something close to Portland where people didn't have to drive that far. And we just couldn't find anything. And then in 2014, I want to say, or 2013, the partners out on Thompson's Point approached me with their idea. And we walked through the site, and it was a shithole. I mean, it was the old railroad yard, right? And then the depot building was still there with the sides on it, and like a bunch of addicts sadly were in there and camped out, and it was not pretty. And the site itself was like garbage and mud, but I was like, let's do it.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I shared their vision for sure, but they had the initial vision, which was great. And we went through about a year or two of like going back and forth with proposals and ideas, and finally came to an agreement. And then 2015 was our first season, quote unquote, with Ingrid Michaelson kicking it off, and there was a hurricane. And we set up everything that morning, and we were like, we can't do the show. And we moved it all to the State Theater and like pulled it off in a day. It was,
wow.
Oh my God, my fucking staff. I love them so much. I mean, I literally can't believe they pulled it off, but it happened and it was awesome.
That was day of. The pivot was day of?
Day of. Yeah, that morning. I still remember it like 11 in the morning. We were in the production office with the production manager, the tour manager, the agent was on speakerphone, and my production manager and myself were all in the room. We're just like, ugh. And it was torrential wind and rain. And yeah, it was good. And then Passion Pit was the next show, and he canceled.
I remember that.
But you know what? If we could get through that, we could get through anything, I think. And we did.
Well, now you've got three venues of differing size, so you can pretty much offer, hey, oh yeah, you fit well here at Port City, you fit well here at the State Theater, you fit well outside in the summer at Thompson's Point. You've got an option for everybody. That's, I mean, ideal at that point, right?
It's ideal, and it was great. It was great too. It still is great. But when you have rooms of that size, you've been in the business for as long as our combined years, which was like 70 years or something. Agents and managers really start trusting you, and that's really what it's all about on this side of the business. It's they trust you to put their artists and their family in the right room. So, we get a lot of people who are just super hungry to play the State Theater, but if they've never played the State Theater or haven't sold out Port City Music Hall, you kind of have to like gently redirect them back to Port City and be like, you know what? Think about like a half empty State Theater. I'm not saying it would be, but if, and it might not feel like that good, but think about a packed sold out show at Port City. And then the next time you come, you'll play the State Theater and sell that out. And it's good. It's good to be trusted in that way. It's a long history there between myself and a lot of agents that are still around, and managers and their bands. But yeah, when we did have three rooms, it was awesome.
So I know our listeners can't see behind you, Lauren, but you have a Maggie Rogers poster, And I know she's been one that's graduated through the ranks, right? She's had a couple shows at Port City, then the State.
She had one show, I think, at Port City, and then a few at the State, and two at Thompson's Point. Same with Lake Street. Lake Street, we had at Port City. They sold out so far in advance that we were like, just skip Port City. And we moved it to the State, and that sold out. And everybody, we were like, what? Who is this band? And they were like, what? We didn't know we were that big in Portland. And they're just another, like, Portland's favorite. Any show they do here will sell out. It's crazy.
Got to trust the process up through the ranks.
That's right. Yeah, it works. It totally works.
Were there any other bands over the course of this time frame that you were like, or the band didn't realize they had the following that they did in Portland? You had to, you pushed them, greased them right through to the State Theater or Thompson's Point?
There's usually a couple. I think one of the most recent ones was Sylvanesso. I think they were looking at Port City. I was like, don't, you got to play the State. And they sold out. Some shows sell out Port City, and we do, like Late Street, we'll just move it to the State Theater so they skip it. But that's like the ideal situation, right? So you're playing a little bit conservative, hoping that it'll just take off, and you're wrong, really. 90% of the time, if you're a good promoter, you're never wrong. 10% of the time you're like, oh good, I was too conservative. And then 1%, it's like you sold 3 tickets and you're like, I suck.
We all have those days though, right?
That's so interesting with Portland scene. Do you see yourself, like, when you're traveling, you talked about like being on vacation, do you see yourself in these other markets? Like, oh, they have the small, medium, large thing going on too. And are they executing at the same level that we're doing and so forth?
I think most of the promoters that I communicate with do it the right way. And they're the ones who've been around for as long as we have or longer. Cause they just know how to do it for sure.
Yeah, it's cool because it's not like you're shorting the band. It's not like you're like selling them short. You're like literally like, trust me, like help me help you.
No, let's it's do really a sold just out helping show. Them develop their business smartly and efficiently.
Exactly.
No one, and that's, I think, the huge devastation I think we'll see in the next year without a Port City is that there's no mid-size room at this point. I mean, I think eventually that's what we're looking at, right? We'll open a new room, but not during a pandemic, and certainly not on the right when we open the State Theater. That's our focus right now.
Nate, you kind of asked a question I was curious about. So my day job, I'm a IT project manager. So, you know, I'm a control freak. I love to own the plan. When I'm on other projects, I'm like kind of looking at how the other project manager's managing it. In my head, I'm like, I do this different, that different, this different. So when you go to other venues and shows, are you looking at like, geez, this is not efficient? Is there any of that?
Exactly. Yeah, some, but it's actually the opposite way. Whenever I go to another venue, I'm like so fucking happy I'm not in one of my venues. Because at my venue, and my staff will attest to this, they're all like, oh God, here she comes. What is she going to point out? When I can go to a show that's not a State Theater owned or operated venue, I'm just like trying to have the most fun as possible and just enjoy myself. Cause it's not that I don't enjoy myself at the State Theater, but it's, you know, even when I'm not working, I'm working. But yeah, I think outdoor concerts, I think, are the most, other venues I think are most helpful for me. That's where I tend to, like, cause you're outside and you're having fun anyway. And you're like, oh, that's a really great idea. Or, oh my gosh, I'm not even standing on grass. I'm standing on AstroTurf. I don't know if I would have known that. It's a great idea.
Right. There's that angle. Yep.
And those, I mean, outdoor concerts are just a blast, especially in a place like Portland, Maine, where the summer is, don't blink, it's over. But when we have it, we're like, this is the best. This is why we live here, because these, you know, 45 days or so are just perfect.
45. It's about right.
Something like that, right? I grew up here. I could say that.
It's true.
Telling the way you described it, it's like, that's the reason I left. But us talking about like Maine State Theater in Portland, Maine, I'm like, God damn, I want
to
get back.
Time to come back, bro. Time to come back.
Man.
Well, you're not missing much right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know. There's culture there that didn't exist when I left, I feel like. Yeah, and the State Theater, I think what you're doing, Lauren, is actually a huge part of that. Because without that art scene, it's kind of bland. It gets kind of, or at least at the time. When I left in 2007 originally, like there was nothing going on at all.
It was really depressing there for a few years here, especially from 2006 to 2010, when the State wasn't open and no one was coming through, and there just wasn't other, you know, there's not a venue to grow into. So all the baby bands were like, why am I going to Portland, Maine? I agree. Thank you. I feel like we had a huge hand in driving this economy to where it is today and developing this city. beyond the art scene. I mean, it's like, why are there breweries and why are there so many restaurants? It's because, you know, there was music here first, I think. And then everybody, and like I said, then all of a sudden we all established ourselves and just kind of grew up and grew the city together. But I mean, just for example, when the State Theater opened, there was nothing on our block. It was so sad that the owner of the building, it's a different owner now, but the owner of the building wanted to put metal gates in front of our box office. Cause they're like, wow. trust us, you guys, you're going to get ransacked. You're going to get the window, your nice windows will be broken. And we're like, that's only going to encourage that kind of behavior. Like, let's not do that. Yeah, and then look at the block now. It's like every single space, or at least it was until a year ago, every single space is booked with retail or restaurant or merchants. It's awesome.
And some cool spots too, like really cool bars and eateries, and it's, yeah.
So that takes us to the present. Obviously, the last show at the State Theater was, at this point, probably over a year ago. I will say this, though. You guys have stayed in front of people's eyeballs. So I'm on the mailing list. I follow you on social medias, and you're always promoting something, whether it's a live stream. You had the, what was the series you were doing there? I forget the name. Tony, you remember it. You have a great memory.
With all the local bands?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did our live streaming series. We're hoping to pick that up again in March. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to tell my social guy because he's very discouraged right now.
Oh, no.
When do we not talk about when something comes up with the state? I mean, we've talked with the state a ton over the last year on this podcast, just because we grew up there, we love it, and it's still kind of finger on the pulse for what's going on, I think. With obviously you're looking for COVID relief. There was COVID relief, which is a good thing, but it took forever to get there, and it's, for some places it was too late. But you know, we don't dwell too much on just the bad part. You pivoted to selling merch. You pivoted to the cool print behind the State Theater print behind you. That's badass. You're doing some live stream stuff that is ticketed too, right? So
a little
made
bit,
yourself,
yeah,
viable.
Conclave is, yeah, what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Conclave. I mean, it's really more of just making sure that we're present in people's lives so that they don't forget about us and they come back to us. It's not anything that we pivoted to isn't making us, you know, enough revenue or any kind of anything close to what we were doing. We're in a relatively safe position in terms of the State Theater in Thompson's Point for various reasons. Port City, not so much. We didn't own the building. The landlord didn't want to negotiate, and we didn't want to pay rent for a year on a dark building. But yeah, we want to stay relevant, and we want to stay present, and we want people to remember that we're their best friend. Just kidding. But I appreciate the kind words, because we actually talk about this a lot during staff meetings, because we run out of things to talk about. And, you know, half of us get discouraged while the other half of us are super hopeful. And then it flip flops, and then I'm feeling discouraged and somebody else is trying to like be positive. So it's good to hear that you guys are seeing it and you're paying attention and you like it, because it makes us feel a lot better during this time, because it's actually really fucking sucked. Not to talk about dark times, but it's been absolutely devastating what we've gone through, and not just the State Theater, the whole live music and live event business. It's devastating. And while the COVID relief came and the it was SOS, now we call it the SVOG Act, passed in the December relief bill, we haven't seen it. They haven't even released the applications yet. So a bunch of the smaller venues are going out of business, even though they were, a month ago, they were like, oh, we're saved. They can't even apply yet. So it's a struggle for sure.
So based on what you're saying, though, and I might be wrong here, but correct me if I'm wrong, if we have tickets to a show to the State Theater, for instance, that almost is helping keep the State Theater afloat.
Yes.
Based on an advance. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Any ticket to any venue, if you have it and you have the financial means to hold on to it and not get a refund, please do it. Cause that's really all how anyone's staying in business is money in the bank, and our money in the bank is advance ticket sales.
Okay. Interesting. We've talked about it on here. I think we all have tickets to shows. I have tickets to half of a tour out here at West for Pearl Jam. Like, I'm not trading them in, because I know that when that comes back, it's going to be like the best thing ever. It's already going to be the best thing ever, but now with the anticipation.
Yeah.
And if it means holding places like the State Theater afloat, then I mean, obviously it just goes full circle. So that's good.
Does.
It's good to know, to get that confirmed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for talking about that.
Bon Iver tickets that we're hanging on to, because we were excited, obviously, for last July, right?
Yep.
So Lauren, we have a fair amount of listeners in Maine and local. Like what can our audience do to help, you know, just obviously continue to see live music when it opens up, but in the interim?
That's the biggest thing, I think, in the near future, because we're all, especially this week, feeling really hopeful for this year. Whereas 2 weeks ago, we were like, it's not happening this year. Yeah. That's really the number one thing, number one helpful thing is like when we come back, just please buy tickets and come see your favorite band. Or even if it's not your favorite band and you're like, I like that band, buy the tickets. I mean, it's key. It's really what will help us the most. Granted, most of the money goes to the artist, but the artist needs to make money too. And everybody's been out of a job for the past year, and especially the artist, especially now when most of an artist's income is through touring. It's not through a record label who are advancing them money for a freaking record. And it's a lot of merch, but it's touring. And then the other small stuff is like gift certificates. Even if we don't have any shows announced, buy a gift certificate for a future show. It's always good for any future show. Merch will always help venues. Just a nice email or note is a huge spirit booster. I know that sounds so cliche, but it rarely ever happens. And then when we get it, we're like, this is awesome. We can last another month.
Yes.
We were talking about it the other night where when it does open up, I think everything's going to sell out. Like me personally, my like fringe band that I would have gone to like 3 or 4 years ago is going to be like I'm buying it day of. Like it's,
oh yeah.
I think we're a rare breed because we love it, but we're going to go to everything.
Agreed. And even when we have like month or biweekly staff Zooms, we're all like, holy crap, remember the show that we stayed home for because we were like tired and like we had, oh, I went to the show last night. I'm not going to go tonight. I'm like, oh my God, never again.
Never.
Going to every show.
You essentially just summed up the last 52 episodes of this podcast. That's all we've done has been like, man, we should have gone to that. Or I can't believe I didn't, through 2020 eyes, why didn't I go to that?
But I agree. I think I feel pretty... Again, asked me 2 weeks ago and I would have been like, no, we're never gonna open. But now with the vaccines going the way they're going and the cases going down, knock on wood, if the trajectory continues like this, I feel like it's going to be a really bonkers fall for sure. Oh my God, I hope so.
Yeah, get some more Thompson's Point shows in September, October. That'd be awesome.
I mean, if we can salvage, that's the thing. We're ready to go. If we can salvage August and September and go into October, we absolutely will. I think right now we're waiting on obviously the state of Maine and the governor to announce her plans, and you know we're erring on the side of caution. We always want to listen to science, but we're ready to go, and we're ready to go in a really safe manner. And I mean that's what we've done for the last 10 years. That's what we do. And then it really relies on the touring. Are there artists going to be touring? Because when you think about it, that's fucked. When you think about it, if everyone's going out at the same time, there's only a limited amount of production. There's only a limited, I mean, if you don't own your own production, you're renting it from a production company. You're renting your tour bus. You're actually, if you don't have a tour manager who's with you, you know, they share tour managers. You're not going to have a tour manager. It's crazy. So, but I'll take it if it's that crazy. If tours are out, we'll go. And if the state of Maine allows us to open, then we're ready.
Lauren, we've talked about that at length on here, actually, on tours that were booked that are getting postponed and how that interferes with tours that were booked for 2021, 2022. Everything is basically just being pushed ahead, I take it.
Yeah.
Or there's some kind of bidding war on that arena or theater or whatever it is. So is that something you're dealing with in real time, or is that?
I haven't heard much about that. I think for the most part, venue avails are very difficult to get in fall right now. Like we're stacked up 7 and 8 holds a day some days. Wow. Those naturally clear out for us, especially like a market like Portland. But I can't imagine a primary market right now. I bet it's just a total fight over venue avails and like who's getting what. Most venues have their own production, so an artist can make it work. They might have to downsize a little bit, but it can happen. But for the artists that are going into arenas and the outdoor shows who don't have their own stuff, man, I don't know. It's a good and terrible time to be a production company because you don't have any business right now, but get ready. It's like I tell my staff, I'm like, if you're going on vacation, whether it's a staycation or not, like you go now because you will not be taking any time off when we reopen.
Part two to that question, I don't even know if you can answer this. Have you gotten any proactive protocols for when reopening occurs that you have to follow some kind of social distancing, even with a vaccine in place?
Yeah, we're prepared for that, and we can operate under that. And we're, you know, there are some people just don't even want to open under restricted capacity or social distancing for some venues. It just doesn't make financial sense. You know, like when you're selling less tickets, but you're expecting to pay the same amount of money, obviously that doesn't make any sense. We're ready to do that. We're hoping that we don't have to do that. Again, this all really, really relies on how fast the vaccinations go and the age groups, and then herd immunity and science. Ideal situation, we don't have to adhere to any restrictions or capacity restrictions or social distancing or physical distancing, but we certainly will if we have to. I mean, backstage protocol will automatically change. I mean, we're probably going to get rid of catering at the State Theater, and there'll be buyouts, which is fine anyway. It just encourages bands to experience our local restaurant scene. You know, hand sanitizer will never go away. We've got like, 80 gallons of it like spread throughout the venue, which will never go away backstage. Bands might stay on their buses a lot more and not come into a venue. It really depends. It's all a guessing game at this point. I'm making assumptions and trying to make educated guesses.
Yeah, I think meet and greets are maybe a thing of the past.
Good.
Nate's really sad.
Nate'll find him outside. He always does.
I don't think they'll ever go away. They'll just change. Like there's no, there'll be no touching.
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
All right. We got a couple quick hitter lightning round questions to finish up here. Nate, you got to do the first one though. That one was yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about this earlier when you were booking the Big Easy. But in terms of the State Theater or even these, you know, Thompson's Point, what is like some band that you booked that you, you know, huge fan of maybe prior as a kid or whatever, and you booked them and they finally walked into the venue, you're like, holy shit, like this is actually happening.
I'd get that. I actually have a lot of those experiences. The very, very first, and this wasn't even under the current iteration of the State Theater, but when I booked Modest Mouse, I think it was in 2008. I want to say, or not 2008, 2004.
I was at that show. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like, that was my very first show that I ever booked at the State Theater by myself. And it was my, like one of my all time favorite bands. I couldn't believe that was happening. I'll always remember that. And then, when I booked Churches and The Kills, like back to back, The Kills are like one of my all time favorites too. We have a really funny story. McCray Hathaway, I don't know if you guys know him, but he works with me at the State Theater, and we're working the show that night. And after The Kills show, and McCray and I thought we were the only ones backstage. We were like cranking music, we were like pounding beers. We were so happy that we saw the show. And we go to lock up, we walk by the green room dressing room, and Allison Mosshart's just sitting there, like with her cell phone in front of the mirrors with the lights on, like the only one backstage. She'd been there the whole time, and we're like, holy shit. So I knock on the door and she turns, and I go to shake her hand and be like, oh my God, thank you so much. And she turned and I'm just like, I'm going to go for it. And McCray was horrified. I like picked her up and like gave her a bear hug and like went like this and put her back down. And I realized what I'd done, and her face, she was just like, what the fuck? And then I looked at McCray, and McCray was like, backing away.
Hey, that's what music will do to you, or a couple
of
beers.
I tell you what, I'm rarely ever like that, but after a few beers, when you think you're alone, you're like, and then Allison Mosshart's sitting there, you're like, okay, I'm going for the bear hug. I don't know, tons of bands, like Sylvanesso was like such a memorable night for many reasons. Chris Christopherson, you're like,
that's
who?
Cool. No, yeah.
So flip side of that, we were kind of talking about this a little earlier, like show regret, like through 2021 lens, every show you missed is like, what was I thinking? Was there any show that on the booking side where it almost happened, but it didn't for whatever reason, the tour redirected or you guys double booked, that you're like, God damn, why couldn't we have pinned that down?
I actually don't know if I can think of any of those types of shows. I feel like if that ever happens, they always come back. Whether it's like during the next routing or the next tour. I actually can't remember the last time I was like super disappointed that we missed a show. I kind of feel like when that happens, that we have so many other good shows, it just kind of erases that feeling.
It's a great setup to have then.
Yeah, it's good.
No complaints.
No complaints. I mean, on the flip side of that too, while The Kills was like one of my absolute favorite shows, it was also a complete bomb. And I was like, oh, maybe should have put them at Port City.
All right. Last one we've got here. With technology nowadays, obviously there's metrics everywhere. You can read them however you want to, you know, the statistics for all kinds of different things. Are there any certain ones that you lean on to like maybe figure out if a band's going to be a good fit for you?
No, I don't. Like there'll be very rare times when I'm not familiar with a band or a band's on the cusp of moving from a smaller room to the State Theater. And I'm like, I don't know if I should pull the trigger, that I'll like occasionally check their tour history. And you can do that on Polestar. But that's really rare. It really is just it's a lot of your instinct, a lot of your gut, a lot of if they're good. I mean, I hate to say it, but like if I'm not familiar with someone and an agent inquires, I go right to Spotify. I mean, it's rare when that happens, but that's the first thing I'll do. Yeah. And then we have so much tour history doing 100+ shows for 10 years. I usually have numbers just already in my computer if I need to, if I need to look back. But I mean, I've been doing it for so long. I'll know within the first email. I'll be like, no, yes, no, yes, maybe.
That makes sense. I mean, especially where you've been doing it as long as you have. We kind of likened this to talking to Rob back on episode 17 forever ago, and he's close friends with all of us. Him having gone through changes at the radio station and then being like, you need to play this song, and him being like, Portland ain't going to like that. Like, I know what they want. I've been doing it for a while. I know how to handle that. So it's the same idea, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, you know, when T5 opened and Brooklyn Steel down in New York, I remember seeing shows there. I'm like, holy crap, this artist is doing like 3 nights at Brooklyn Steel. I better get them at the State Theater. And all of a sudden it's like, they can't sell 300 tickets at Port City Music Hall. It's just every market is so different. Every fan base is so different. The crowds are so different. People's tastes are so different. You do really, really rely on a lot of instinct and just a lot of personal history and history with bands.
And even some
I wish I had those kind of metrics. I'd never be wrong. And then you wouldn't have to, I'd just blame numbers and not myself, which my staff does all the time.
That's crazy. And then sometimes you get shows that are maybe bigger than the capacity, but you take it anyway. So the Queens of the Stone Age show.
Queens of the Stone Age, yeah, I was just about to say.
I was going to say, that's like an automatic sellout, right? Was that just like, we're going to do the State Theater or we're not going to come to Maine, or was it?
No, I feel like, you know, where did they play? They played the up north in Bangor, or they played the did they play the Cross in Bangor? They played an arena up there and it just didn't translate for some reason. And the next time they came back, I think they were like, why did we do that? Why didn't we just play the State Theater? And I think for some of those bands, they just don't, in certain markets, they just don't want to play. They know they can play arenas, but they just don't want to. And they'd rather have that kind of experience with fans. Cause when you move into an arena, it's a completely, as an artist, I can imagine is so completely different the way that you are on stage, and you can't interact with your fans. And and at the State, they're literally right there. I mean, we have a barricade, but the barricade is, you know, it's what, 6 feet away. At the arena, at any arena, the fans are way out there.
And that show, I was at that show, and two things. That was the night the Pats were playing the Falcons after they had come back and beaten them in the Super Bowl the year before. So I was like, I'm missing that. I want to watch that. But I got Queens of the Stone Age tickets at the State Theater. Had to go. Oh, and I remember getting there, like trying to watch the first quarter and getting in line late and not getting the print. I wanted the print so bad, the print they did for the State Theater, which one of my favorite bands at one of my favorite venues. There's a print. I'm like, oh, shit. Pretty I wish awesome. I could have got my hands on that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was a blast. That show was awesome. And another one of those times where I stood wherever I wanted. I walked down to the front and hung out there, took some pictures, hung out back at the bar. You just can't beat it.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'll never forget that night. That was awesome.
There's only so many of those bands that can do like different kinds of venues like that on the fly. It's like Neil Young, Queens of the Stone Age. Like, I'll do an arena, I'll do a theater. There's only so many bands that have that kind of like flexibility, though. So that's kind of unique situation.
Yeah. Foo Fighters.
Yep.
So, Lauren, I've probably been to, and I could find the number because I keep every show I've ever been to in a spreadsheet because I'm a real nerd. Probably 100 State Theater shows over the last 21 years. And I can only think of one that didn't have a barricade. It was a new metal show in like 2001, the band Cold. There was no barricade. Are those days ever coming back? The no barricade State shows?
It actually, we actually, at the State Theater, it's usually up. There are some bands that just don't want a barricade.
So and if
we
can, band.
We always, yeah, it's, it, sometimes it's up to the band. I mean, if it's a metal show or heavy, yeah, a heavy show like that, where we know that there's like a lot of crowd interaction, we'll say, no, we have to have the barricade. We won't put it, you know, as far as we normally do, but we have to have one. And we might not put security in the barricade, but just that added level of protection helps. But yeah, there's just some bands who absolutely like don't want it. They don't need it and we won't put it out.
Well, I think that wraps us up. You made our night, you know, the last hour. So we appreciate it.
You guys are too nice. Thanks. I hope I didn't talk too much. Nope. Sorry.
No, it was perfect. So yeah, we'll probably wrap it there. And I know the State, it's probably pound for pound my favorite venue. It's the venue I've probably been to the most. And I know Nate and Tony, probably the same. Actually,
yep.
We were talking about it before. I think collectively, it's probably our favorite venue. It's just such a special place. So we had to have you on. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you so much. It was so great to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Wow, that was a dream come true as a nerd for all three of us. We got to talk to Lauren Wayne. And man, she had some really cool stories and some surprises in there. And she's just someone that we admire. Like, she brought the culture to Portland, Maine that we had been kind of waiting for. And there was some cool things, you know, before her, but I think she really, you know, brought it into Maine and helped it. What do you guys think?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think you definitely saw, you know, kind of a change of the guard, you know, when she took over the helm. And, you know, some of the most iconic venues, we mentioned a few other venues, you know, on the episode, but, you know, you can't beat the total package of the State Theater. And certainly we loved Port City. We'll definitely miss that. And Thompson's Point is absolutely fantastic as well. You know, we grew up there. We grew up at the State Theater. I mean, what more could we ask for, you know?
Yeah, really cool. Really, I mean, as I said to her, we've said numerous times on this podcast, a place that we cherish, a place that we absolutely love, and wanted to have her on to tell the story of it, because it's our place. It's our home. It's our, where we cut our teeth as music fans, as nerds. And to hear how all of that came about over the last 10 years or so with the reopen and Lauren kind of running the show since then, that was cool, man. Like, I'm happy we were able to do that. And she'd been on our wish list for quite some time, and we were able to make it happen, and she was awesome.
Yeah, really answering the questions pretty in depth too. But like you said, like, State Theater is very holy grail for us. I mean, it was our comic book store. It was our arcade, you know, it was our, you know, sports arena. It was the concert venue. The State Theater is quintessential for all the memories, but really just a breeding ground for us to understand how the music translates live. And it's never been the same ever since. So to hear it coming from her too, I mean, we talked about it at length. Like, she was at, you know, even before she was the talent buyer there, a lot of the shows that we were at with together. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we talked about it kind of off air a little bit, but it was a State Theater show was the first concert that I went to of a band that I wanted to go to. I saw 311 there in 2000, March 2000, with Jimmy's Chicken Shack. And, you know, 14-year-old kid, you see this brick building and you're like, all right, you know, you have no idea what to expect. Like, I didn't think it would be that big. And you walk in and it's like, wow, this is pretty grand. And I don't know, it was this cool mystique of, you know, almost thinking it was a place you shouldn't be, being that young. And, you know, there's people smoking pot and there's beer, and it's like, wow, this is interesting. And it was a great show. And I still think I have disposable camera photos from that show, because I remember bringing my camera, you know, being a geek, being a nerd that young. I'll have to try to see if I can get those developed. But I have memories from dating back to then. And then the last show we went to, I think, at the State was that Incubus 20-year Make Yourself show. So we've been going there for many, many years. And Nate, you before me. And this was fantastic. And I cannot wait till they reopen the doors.
And not just there, like Thompson's Point too. Get outside, see some live music outside with 7,500 people with open air and the sun going down over the water. And it's just a really special place to see a concert. And that's a place that they also, Lauren also books for and is the GM of too. So pretty exciting stuff. We're happy we were able to talk to her and, you know, kind of nerd out with somebody that we've looked up to for all these years as far as music goes in Portland, Maine.
Yeah, and I think there's a common theme with, and I don't know if we're just like lucky with all of our guests, but that kind of super nerdy, super geeky, like definitely not entitled, like earn the stripes type guest. And she definitely just put that out there on the podcast, on the episode, which I think is really neat because we always wonder, like, how did this happen? Like, how did you get that gig? And it always comes down to like persistence and just like, just nothing but passion. And she went, you know, she talked at length at that, and to see her go from a state theater kind of falling apart to now Portland, Maine being kind of like a premier place for live music is great to see. And it really makes me proud to be from Portland because it really was a nowhere city. And now it's, I mean, I'd say it's probably world renowned for what it has to offer between food and now the live nation, live music and just culture altogether.
Breweries, so, man. Yeah. We get some good beers too.
It's amazing though, that all three of those venues, like they've developed into their own brand. And how I kind of look at that is like, there are so many bands that I've found out because they played Port City. I mean, most state bands I've heard of and most Thompson's Point shows, bands I've heard of, but Port City, it's like, all right, if they're coming to Port City, they're obviously pretty well known. Like, what am I missing? And there's been a number of bands that I've found out about through them booking at Port City and just the whole feeder system going up. It's just, I'm definitely going to miss that venue, but appreciate the shows that did happen there. I just want shows, guys. That's what it comes down to.
Me too. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. And hopefully things are headed in the right direction. And we can see them before the 2021 is over.
Yeah. Antoine, the way you described it, it's like, now that we know all the work that goes on behind the scenes for even a nobody name, like you almost want to go just to show support at this point. Like, you know,
100%
hearing her talk about shows that had small, you know, turnouts and whatnot, you're like kind of heartbroken for her. Like, oh man, like that was a lot of work. And you know the artist is good. So now, like you're saying, like if they're getting booked, like there's probably something behind that. You know, if you can make it happen, like make it happen, you know, after COVID, after everything kind of opens up, like we'll be at those shows like we talked about on air. Like we'll be there as much as we can possibly be.
Yeah, and get tickets. So in the next couple of months or so, if you start to see things maybe actually come into fruition, get your hands on those tickets and go to those shows. Let's go, right? Let's be outside. Yeah. Let's have some fun. Let's go to a concert. We don't have to rub elbows, but we can, you know, be 10 feet away from somebody, have a beer, cheers them in midair, and watch the concert, right?
I'm in. You sold me.
Yeah, sold. Yeah, buy an experience, not a tangible item. And support local business at the same time. Can't go wrong there.
Thank you, everybody, for checking us out tonight. I think that's a good spot for us to wrap. We had a blast talking to Lauren tonight. We appreciate everybody that's checked us out. If this is your first time checking us out, hit us up on the socials. Hit us up on email. We really enjoy doing this and love talking to you people. We're a year old now, guys. This is pretty crazy.
Episode 52.
Yep. It's nuts.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. See you next week.
Peace, Podheads.
Thanks, everyone. And Lauren, we just want to let you know you are now a certified Podio Slave nerd. Cheers.